better than being bent.
Oh, should we kick it off?
Let's
do it. We've got Sean here. Isn't that amazing?
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
We had to adjust the mic height and everything because he's back.
We had to prop up the side of the bench and everything.
Yeah.
Well, no, we're really happy to have you here, not to make you feel unwelcome.
Thanks, Jesus Christ, let's get on with this.
All right, cool. This is the FakeShip.net podcast.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Hey, you've got 3 seconds for it.
I'm going to amp this baby up, see how it sounds.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell, Terrence.
Thanks for listening. My name's Glenn.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Sean.
And once again, you can hear us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher. Interact with us. Back it up. No, Mum, I don't want to go to the dentist. Oh, man, I rewound too far. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Interact with us on there.
Do all that kind of stuff.
Start arguments.
Why not? Stir the pot. We don't bite.
We love arguments.
Let's jump straight into some goss. Has anyone got anything they want to talk about?
I got one thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's made me angry. When I heard this news.
Oh, my God. He's going to do what I was going to do.
Is this about Neil Blomkamp?
You know exactly what you're going to do. It's not about Neil Blomkamp.
It's about House. Okay.
No, it's not about House.
Oh. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that in a second.
Right, okay.
This one, I sat and I thought about this. I heard this news and I thought about it a couple of times. And every time I thought about it, how do I describe the feelings that are brought up in me? Apoplectic. Incandescent with white hot rage. They've announced that they're going to be... remaking Memento.
Yes, okay. So you posted this on Facebook this
week.
What
the hell is going on here? Does it really... Is it like... I have no words.
Well, what year did this movie come out? 2002?
2001.
2001. Yeah. Okay,
so it's old enough that it deserves a remake for starters?
Too soon.
Too soon.
Too perfect a film.
It is
unwarranted.
Not to mention it's Christopher fucking Nolan.
Exactly.
Who's hot property.
Absolutely. This is like going back and doing a Spielberg film while he's still alive.
The only way you could get away with this is if you went back to remake it inside itself.
Yeah. Whoa. Hang on.
Hang on. What does that mean?
I have no idea what I just...
Is someone going to out Nolan Nolan? It's like an inception.
I understand all the words I just said, but just not in that sense.
Heard that before.
It doesn't make any sense. When Memento came out, it was obviously Nolan's first film. Relatively small budget. Well,
yeah.
Very small budget.
Yeah.
It was about $4 million or something like that. But the script is just so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The structure, the editing is just so good. I don't understand what a remake... Even if you throw $80 million at it,
yeah,
what is
yeah.
it? What is $80 million going to
maybe
bring?
They'll get Gus Van Sant with the exact same script and he'll do it.
Makes sense.
You never know.
It's worked before.
Hey, Soderbergh.
Yeah.
What if Vince Soderbergh, Soderbergh could take both versions, chop them into one film?
Yeah. Release it to the internet for free.
He could do kind of limey on it. And you'll play with
yeah, definitely. Like he could also take House and remake that.
Oh, there you go.
Right. Yeah. Way. Okay. So, and that is sacrilege to me. This is one of my childhood favorites. I think it's one of those films from the mid '80s that was a perfect balance of comedy and horror, along with Return of the Living Dead,
yeah,
American Werewolf in London, and now they're going and doing this, and I can't help but feel they're taking this Evil Dead approach. Sean S. Cunningham seems to think it's quite revolutionary that. What we're going to do is basically take everything that worked with House and do that again, but we're going to switch William Katz's character, the Roger Cobb character, out, and I'm going to have a female lead.
It works for everyone.
Oh my God.
It works for everybody else.
Exactly. Exactly. And what we might do is, now this is obviously not in any article, it didn't come out of Sean S. Cunningham's mouth, but I can't help but feel this. We'll take the comic elements out, like we did with the Evil Dead remake, and we'll just make it a straight out kind of horror film, and we'll probably throw a shit ton of blood in it.
They're getting the boot in, aren't they?
Yeah,
the reboot.
Then they'll sell it to Netflix for a series or something.
Oh yeah, true. Right. They'll put all this time and effort and wasted energy into it, and it'll probably go
and
VOD.
Didn't they already remake House with number 4?
That was fucking
terrible.
Yeah, it was the worst of the franchise.
Yeah,
can I be honest, boys?
Yeah, go on.
I've never seen House.
No,
I swear to God. Never seen House.
Oh my God, you've got it. House, unlike the gate, the house will live up to any sort of bit of talk you've heard. It is a solid film.
And you've even got Norm
from Cheers, is it?
Yeah, George Wendt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, Jarrett may not agree with this, but once you've done House 1, please go and do House 2.
You got to do it. You just got to do it. I mean, it's got killer cover art. Why not?
Yeah, that's right. Number three has killer cover art.
It does. The horror show.
That's the only thing I know about it is my days as a child in a VHS store looking at the cover of House and never actually watching House itself.
Ding dong, you're dead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a poster.
Yeah.
Horror has found a new home. Yeah, it's also one of the taglines used for that.
Finger, yeah.
And number two had the decomposed
finger. Oh, so good.
Yes.
So good.
Oh, well, speaking of segues, Paul Blart.
Well, they're going to remake that, but they're going to make a good film this time.
He does a good segue.
No, Paul Blart. He rides a segue. It took me a minute to pick it up, and I had to explain it to you. I love it.
There is no room for that. All right,
let's move on. We've got a focus film, and it is Astron 6's recent
The Editor.
You always fucking do that.
I did it a little differently this time.
The Editor.
Every single time.
Kind of sounded like wrestling.
So The Editor, Astron 6's third feature-length film.
Yeah.
Which Jared and I first saw last year at Monster Fest, and it blew our fucking minds.
And it made both of our top tens last year.
Sure did. So shall I give a bit of a brief synopsis?
Please do.
Okay, so a world-renowned film editor who's lost his hand in a tragic editing accident is relegated to cutting up shitty, pulpy, kind of trashy movies for a studio.
Jell-O films.
And when the cast of the film he's working on starts showing up dead, he finds himself as the prime suspect in a murder investigation. And I'll just leave it at that. The rest of it's all sort of kind of homage and hijinks and just
absolutely
fucking outrageous gore and titties and ass and... How good's this film?
Oh my God, Jesus. I'll be honest, until we talked about it the other day, I've never even heard of it, which I'm really ashamed to say because it was absolutely phenomenal. I cannot praise this film enough. It was so, so much better than I thought it was.
Not only are you onto this, now you'll be onto Astron 6 and you'll backtrack their cat.
That is
you'll
the
see
first
how
thing
fucking
is
amazing they
and
are.
I think you might actually have an appreciation for the previous films, Manborg and Father's Day. Personally, obviously, I'd watched both films, so I came into The Editor being a massive fan of Italian horror films, particularly from the 70s and 80s.
Yep.
And them doing a take on giallo really piqued my curiosity, but at the same time, I had my doubts because I hadn't really enjoyed either of the previous films, Manborg or Father's Day.
Wow,
really? I didn't mind some of the shorts, but neither really appealed to me. And I went in with an open mind on both of those, so I went in with apprehension on this.
Well, while we're talking about that, let's quickly, just before we move on, just talk about those films.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, The Editor's clearly their best film, but what would you say is your favourite? But I guess you've answered your own question.
Absolutely. This is technically brilliant as well. Like, everything in terms of cinematography, the score. It's a total throwback to the giallo films. Like, the score is just so good. It's got cues from, goblin tracks and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But if you were just to look at it with the volume down... You could easily say
really
this
pretty.
Was a film of...
It's
of,
really pretty.
It is that good.
Yeah. It is that good.
Well, that clearly makes it their best film. My personal favourite's Manborg. I just think that's a whole lot of fun, and it was shot for $1,000 or something like
next
that.
Yeah, next to nothing.
Yeah.
What I'm curious of is what was your problem with the first two? My only exposure is The Editor, and it is such a strong film.
Absolutely.
That it seems bizarre that they could take such a massive... leap forward.
Well, I think technically, in terms of, this one is the best produced, the slickest looking thing they've done. But Manborg was kind of, I guess, a throw to those 80s action sort of sci-fi films that I don't
VHS
have as close
type of,
to sort of...
You know The Eliminators? With.
Yeah, of course.
It's an exact take on The Eliminators.
Very much kind of like, that kind
but
of
with
Empire
green screen
meets
and,
Full Moon type of cheap kind of production. And I've never had a massive sort of like for it, so I guess that I didn't really appreciate to begin with. Then Father's Day I felt was just, I don't know, I couldn't get past just the sheer cheesiness of it all. It just felt really I don't know. Honestly, well, shit. I watched it and I put it on and I kind of almost turned it off.
You know what
the
best gag in Father's Day was, speaking of cheesiness, is where he puts that tap into the maple tree and gets the maple syrup.
No, I can't remember that.
No?
Yeah,
no,
just blanked it out of your memory. Totally. Well, I must say, even when I saw the poster of Father's Day, they're just a little trauma badge.
The poster art was what sold me on Father's Day, because the poster art was dude designs. It's really,
really
cool.
Solid stuff, but like that trauma badge. Every
I'll
time
tell
I
you
see
what,
it,
like I know it got released locally by Monster here, but the trauma release is fucking amazing. It's 5 discs. It's just
you got to give it to Trauma. They don't have release a DVD.
Yeah, well, in this case, they went above.
They did. I think it's the best thing that they ever put out. And I wasn't a fan of the film, but the production
and Lloyd
the package
Kaufman's
is insane.
In it. Like, Lloyd Kaufman's in it in Father's Day. Anyway, back to the editor.
Yeah, the editor.
Stunning film. What else do you want to add?
Well, I just wanted to say that you've got direct references to Argento classics, like obviously like Suspiria with the use of lighting and the supernatural tone and the score. But even from the opening minutes, you've got like a throw to the start of Tenebrae as well. It's just beautiful, and then Fulci is referenced in everything from knives held so close to the pupil that still makes me, and that was really effective in the era. It is played with humor throughout, but it did have some genuinely suspenseful moments.
It oozed skill, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
It's obviously guys who love cinema, not just, I don't think necessarily just the giallo stuff that they're homaging. They know cinema.
Yeah.
The script, outside of being absolutely hilarious, like seriously, laugh out loud funny all the way through, it's just really tight screenwriting.
They've taken their script and deconstructed it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Because every single punch just hits the spot. Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Even the split screens, the way the line comes down.
Yeah, like, beautifully handled. So and there was one sort of transition that was beautiful between the editor looking at his hand, and it was his dreamlike sequence, and then cutting in, and it was just this blending seamlessly together. So, technically just stunning. But all around, this is a fantastic film.
I'd love to know what some of those old directors think of it.
That's
an interview I'd love to have, is all the retrospective Argentos and whatnot coming back Mario Bava stuff is in there and,
Absolutely. One of the things I was going to mention too is when we were watching it, Sean said early on, obviously, is the ADR intended, and obviously that's a trait of these particular films. When they came out, they would have Italian actors, and the Italian actors would speak Italian in the film against an American actor who would speak American and an English actor that speak English. So you've got all these different actors speaking in their native language.
Speak American?
Speak English. Speak in English.
Speak English, American.
And so you've got, but and then what they would do in, they would keep the dialogue track more often than not for, the American and English actors and obviously dub the other actors. So it was always this kind of confusing thing where you go, hang on, what? Especially as a kid when you're watching on VHS, you're like, hang on, is out of sync? It's dubbed? Oh, no, that's right. But that's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so puzzling.
So it comes in and out.
Mind blown. Yeah.
And they've done that so carefully.
They've done it really, really well in this.
It's very well measured for just about every fun. You say, the cinematography was the thing that really got me. Like, really struck me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, for a film that's getting no budget, I reckon whatever budget they had, 3/4
of
it's just spent.
Speaking
of
the budget, the way they funded this, they started with a basic crowdfunder, which if you go to fakechimp.net, the Picking Brain section, we interviewed them just after Manborg had been released, and we asked them what their next project was, and they told us all about the editor, which at that point in time was brand new knowledge to anybody. And then they linked us with their crowdfunder, so you could go and donate. I think I did. I've got the editor certificate hanging on my wall just behind us. But they blew that budget within a week.
Oh,
right.
And then had to go and find that funding elsewhere, which was all friends and, just...
What was that money?
Weren't they aiming for about $30,000, I think it was? Something like that. Right. Yeah.
But they blew it in a week.
They blew it on all of the technical, the lighting and the to get this film looking as good as it can. And I think they shot the whole thing, most of it, on a soundstage, like their own self-created soundstage. So they hired a warehouse outside of, was it Vancouver or Calgary they shot in?
I don't know, you're telling the story.
Okay, well, we'll just assume it's one or the other.
Yeah.
I think it's Calgary. Could be wrong. And they just got a warehouse and just built all the sets in there. So half of those apartments and whatnot were constructed and just,
Incredible. I was going to mention too, obviously this title's releasing next week here in Australia on November 25th through Monster Pictures. And it's actually got a special feature on it called Father Knows Best, which is an interview with Lawrence R. Harvey that I did and put together. And it's going to be on the Blu-ray.
Brilliant.
But in that, Lawrence spoke about how he got involved in the film. It was because the Astron 6 boys were fans of his work. but they couldn't afford to bring him over. So he got a convention in Canada. So he was flown over there for the convention, then had days spare where he went and shot the film.
Now, did he do the convention knowing he was going to be doing the editor?
Did the convention with the intention of getting over there. Nice. So it was his paid trip to get over there. But then picking him up from the airport were like Matthew Kennedy or Connor Sweeney's parents to drive him to the set. And that's how involved the family is. Every friend and family member are involved in the editor.
Imagine just spending an hour in the car with Laura.
And he looks at her and says, "So have you seen the human centipede?"
Exactly.
And I think they even did the catering on the film. So there you go.
Oh, the parents.
The parents, everyone pitches in.
Completely in love with these guys already.
And of course, I think Connor appeared in the Soska Sisters ABCs of Death.
He did, yes, that's right. And Lawrence R. Harvey was part of that film, although the producers decided to split his bit and put it at the end of the movie where he's masturbating to the entire film. What, do you expect me to wank to that?
Good.
Not. So do you have anything else you want to
I was going to mention, that we're actually going to do a giveaway.
Well, that's it. I was going to move on to that. What is this giveaway you speak of?
We've got three copies of the editor on Blu-ray from Monster Pictures, and we've got three copies of the editor on DVD. They've both got alternate cover art to one another. The Blu-ray's got exclusive special features, a commentary, the Father Knows Best featurette, and the Q&A from Monster Fest that is exclusive to the Australian release, making it the most definitive release in the world.
Wow.
Hello. And then the DVD's got a fold-out poster of the Dude Designs art, and I think on the other side it might be Graham Humphrey's art. So I haven't actually seen it yet. We're still waiting for the copies. But we're going to give them away, and I'm going to go for something simple.
Yep.
You know, nothing too cryptic. Just, we want to know, like, do you want us to, let's email this to Glenn at fakeshemp.net. That's Glenn, GLENN at fakeshemp.net, or Jarrett, JARRET at fakeshemp.net. Tell us what your favourite Giallo film is and why. And then that's simple as that. And on the next podcast, we'll go through and we'll choose six winners.
I know the answer.
Well, yeah. There you go. There you go.
Can I email in?
Well, yeah, you could get Mary to do it.
Oh, you know, that doesn't really count, does it?
Well, you know.
I'm taking the mickey here, aren't I?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was just going with it.
Do you want anything from the shop? Cornetto. So speaking of Monster Pictures, we've got Monster Fest coming up, which runs from November 26th to 29th.
I'm excited.
We're excited. We covered that for the last 2 years.
We have, yeah.
Heap of fun. They've changed locations. This year they're at the Lido or Lido Cinemas.
Yes.
How do you pronounce that?
I think it's Lido.
I think so.
I think it is too.
And we all went there for the Monster Pictures Human Centipede 3 screening a number of months back.
Correct. What a venue. And so let's talk about the festival for a little bit. It's a big, fat, chunky program this year, but they've condensed it all into 4 days, which means there's a lot to get through in a short amount of time. Some of the highlights for the festival, we've got Dee Wallace, formerly Dee Wallace Stone.
Yes.
Who, you know, from E.T., The Howling, The Frighteners, which was our last focus film. Fred Williamson, you know, the guy from Black Caesar and...
from Dusk Till Dawn.
And Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
And wasn't he in a film called Boss Nigger?
Yeah, he was.
Skim over that. There's Butch Patrick, who was Eddie Munster.
Right, okay.
John Jarrett from Wolf Creek and a whole lot of others doing Q&As and whatnot. So take it away, boys.
Well, I'm just going to say I'm really excited about seeing Scare Campaign, which is from the guys, two Cairns filmmakers that were responsible for 100 Bloody Acres, which I enjoyed, and I'm really excited about this particular film. I think that's my probably most anticipated movie of the festival. Yeah, what about yourself?
I reckon that too. I've deliberately not read too far into it because I just want to go into it.
I actually don't know what the plot is. Yeah. It's just I know that it's going to have a humor about it, and they seem to have a distinct Australian sort of sense of humor, which is really welcome.
Yeah. Another highlight, you've got the Wolf Creek 10th anniversary.
Very cool.
Got, you know, the original cast is going
to
be.
Yeah, Greg McLean's going
to
be there.
Yeah, Greg McLean. I should have added him to the list of guests.
It's been 10 years.
Amazing.
It's amazing to think, isn't it? Really?
Unbelievable.
But Dee Wallace is also doing a masterclass.
Yeah.
5 hours long.
I know.
Okay, but that's strictly
That's a masterclass.
That's an acting workshop.
That's fine.
I'm happy to go to the clip and tell thing where they're going to show clips from her body of work and
She's also sort of there to present E.T.
Yes, that's in the morning on Sunday, I think, about 9 a.m.
And The Howling. I've
got to work out what I'm going to do because I'm torn between The Howling and E.T. I love both movies, but like if I'm going to stay out till like practically 2, 3 in the morning watching The Howling, there's a good chance I'm not going to make it back to Hawthorne for 9 a.m. for E.T.
Yeah, fuck
you. Dee Wallace is going to fucking do it.
Well, yeah, I know.
So she can do it, why can't you?
Nut up, big boy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Breakfast with D. Yeah,
and I could look, do that. There's also the Kooks and Spooks Trivia Night, which yes. we are going to attend. We took that prize out last
we
year.
We did.
I've got a feeling we're going to take it over. Oh,
I reckon. Sean's joining us this year. We're going
to. We won't get too cocky about it, but let's just say it's ours.
Yeah, that's it. We're looking forward to reaping the rewards of a prize possibly this year.
Yes, and look, my the one I'm looking forward to the most, and I always do, is Dick Dale's Trasharama.
Oh, can't wait for
Trasharama. I love Trasharama.
Trasharama! Trasharama! I can't
my
wait.
My favorite thing, man. Can't and of wait. Course, if you don't know Trasharama, it is exactly what it promises, a whole lot of trash. Short films made on shoestring budgets full of gore, tits, gnarly, puke, vile, vomit.
I'm particularly excited about Birds of Destruction.
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
That's Andrew Leibold's latest film.
Is that guy making movies?
Is this thing was shot 11 years ago, though?
He pumped something new out.
I know. He just had a documentary play in the Philippines, the Rudy Fernandez doco, the last Pinoy action hero, I think it's called. Now he's done Birds of Destruction, which was shot 11 years ago and has just been pieced together.
That fucker off.
Totally come out of the darkest corner.
You can't get
Brisbane and Melbourne.
Can't get the guy to hurry up, can you? No. Like, Leibold will take as long as Leibold takes.
That's it. And he'll be a guest at the festival, actually. Of course. Should mention he's co-hosting the Fred Williamson Marathon on the Friday night with Ben Howling. Ben Howling. Oh! Sorry, D. Wallace.
I've got
D. Wallace on the brain. So, aside from that, Catsick Blues, another one, new Aussie one. I saw the short Catsick Blues, and that was cool. Was it called Catsick Blues?
I think it was.
Very weird. I'm curious to see how that's going to stretch your feature.
I'll be honest with you, when this program came out, I had hardly known about anything on this one. I've looked into a lot of them, and I know exactly what ones I'm going to see, and just,
it's just too much, and there's a few conflicts, so you really got to weigh
up. The problem with me
is,
I love that they've condensed this festival into 4 days, because it's been a real marathon in previous years. Yeah, there's some things on at the same time, and I've got to really choose which ones.
Yeah.
I know exactly which ones they are, but there's also a rooftop party or musical jam session. What's it called?
Is this for the Monsters thing on the Sunday?
Could be. I can't remember.
The closing night parties on the rooftop, I think.
That's the cool thing. There's a lot of party stuff going on here.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what Monster Fest is about. It brings the community together and they get drunk. And they talk endlessly about genre cinema.
There is no better venue. Yep.
No better venue either. Lido's got a rooftop.
No better everything.
Yeah, they've got a jazz bar rooftop. They've got these cinemas. It's just amazing.
Hopefully there's some Three Ravens bacon beer there.
Ooh! Have you tried their bacon beer?
They have a bacon beer.
Yeah. Tastes like bacon. And after you have two, you never want.
Far out, man. That was all the go last year, I tell you what.
Yeah, it was a rager.
Can I be a heathen?
Mm.
Do you know which one I'm looking forward to the most?
Do tell.
Knock Knock.
Right.
Okay. Eli Ross.
I want to see Eli Ross in the one. I said a Catsick Blues.
Well, I will be there for that one. Knock Knock? Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool.
Anything to see that guy back in a big screen. It's been a while, and I know the Green Inferno's not been received that well, but, you know, Hostel 2 was... Hostel 2 was a long time ago.
Hostel 2
And he's been producing a lot in the meantime.
He's been keeping himself busy, but I want to see this guy back in the big screen.
Definitely, so, and it's got Keanu Reeves, who I love watching on the big screen. I don't care.
Two Spanish actresses' names who I... can't even fathom.
Therefore, you should not have mentioned it.
And one of them is in Green Inferno.
I could watch Keanu Reeves read a phone book for 90 minutes and be okay with it.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for that guy.
I reckon they should make that happen.
I reckon it would sell.
That's right.
But then again, did you watch that film that Keanu Reeves directed?
The
Man from...
Yeah, what was that like? I know I digress, but I'm curious.
It was competent.
Right.
It's never going to live up to be.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's, he's licked his chops now. Like, he's shown that he can direct something. And I think it's a really bold kind of film to go out and do for a first film.
For a first film, yeah. I mean, he had a lot of backing, obviously, with the Matrix history. Yen Wu-Ping with the choreography.
And
Reeves has been doing that for
so long.
Did
he do it before he did Ronin 47?
Yes.
Right, so it wasn't off the back of Ronin, the production, that he might have had a bit of assistance or...
No, I reckon that thing would have been in post for quite a while.
Yeah. 47 Ronin was a disaster in post. So
I still haven't seen that either, but I'm not in a rush to watch that one, to be
honest. That's pretty cool.
It's not pretty cool.
What, really?
It's quite a lot of fun.
Okay, you two guys are the only two that have said that to me.
But
we are fake shimp, so...
Well, it's true as well,
Even my girlfriend liked it, and she hates everything.
Yeah, that should be our tagline. FakeShimp.net, we like what you hate.
Yeah. Well, at least one of the three of us will like it. Yeah, you're pretty much guaranteed of that.
Hey, fuck you. Thank
you very much. Hulk much?
All right, we've got a new segment to get into, so let's do that right now.
Hi, I'm Chucky, and I'm your friend to the end. Hidey-ho.
So, yeah, in the past, we've had our regular segments of guilty pleasures.
Hello.
What the fuck was that?
Hot to trot, maybe.
Yeah. And obscurities. And we're going to introduce a brand new one now, which I think we'll keep on rotation. And it's called Forgotten Gems.
Forgotten Gems.
Oh, how are we going to pronounce that?
So forgotten.
Yeah. So we're going to dig up some old movies that, you know, people have forgotten. And
buried treasure. Wanna...
Do they have to be good forgotten?
No.
Are they forgotten because normally
they could be obscure, guilty, forgotten gems.
Yes.
Well, why are we going into this whole thing? But I reckon this might blend in with obscurities quite a bit. True. So let's just see how it plays out. But anyway, Jarrett's going to go first. So
all right, okay. So in my opinion, a forgotten...
Well played.
This one's a forgotten gem, though it's equal parts obscurity and a guilty pleasure due to its poor reviews and even poorer box office.
Can we play a game? Yeah. Can we see who's first to guess it?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, you're looking at that.
Yeah. Because we actually don't know what it...
Summary, though, that's... Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, buzz in at any time.
All right.
Okay,
right.
Like, it's from 1986, and this is the summary of the plot. An obese lawyer who mows down a gypsy in a traffic accident has a curse placed upon by the gypsy. Yep.
Is it thinner?
Yeah, you're correct, sir.
That was not 1986.
1996.
Yeah, I said 96. No, you said 86.
You threw me with this whole trivia thing.
I got it anyway. Yeah, I want a DVD.
Did you want the Blu-ray or the DVD?
Go for it.
Okay, so a curse placed upon by the gypsy's father. As the title suggests, the curse is of getting thinner. Not so bad for a fat guy, you say, but the curse won't stop until there's nothing left. Now, it's based on a Stephen King novel. It was written under his pseudonym at the time, Richard Bachman. King also cameos as the town's pharmacist in it.
Back when he cameoed in everything.
I think he might be Dr. Bangor in it too, because Bangor Maine. So clever. Adapted for the screen and directed by Tom Holland, obviously a Fright Night and Child's Play fame. He actually shot the film in Maine as well, where King wrote the novel. And this marks Holland's second adaptation, immediately following the Langoliers, which he did the year prior in 95. Yeah. And the lead actor is Robert John Burke of RoboCop 3 fame. Mm-hmm. Actually, I just jest. He's been in a lot of films.
Dust Devil, classic.
He's in two of the Hal Hartley's earlier films, and he also played Bart Bass in TV's Gossip Girl.
That's where
and
I
a million TV shows. Yes,
it's Hal Hartley.
Hal Hartley, yeah.
Gossip
Unbelievable
Girl.
Jesus,
what makes you think I watch Gossip Girl?
Well, I don't know, man. You did tell me Gilmore Girls earlier, so all bets are off. And the gloves are off. But the real star of the show is the special effects makeup, and it's by three-time Academy Award-winning technician Greg Canham. And I think the transformation of Burke, you know, the character played by Burke, from going from gargantuan to gaunt is just simply incredible. It looks stunning. The ending of the movie tested badly, apparently, so King was brought in to rewrite the ending, and they shot four endings in total to the film, and apparently the studio also interfered a bit and removed comical elements from the film so it would play more as a straight-laced horror, which you can kind of... There's definitely a wry sense of humor still about it, but it just feel like that it is missing something.
Movie.
But it's a very, very, very cool film for what Thinner lacks in genuine scares. It makes up with that humor. And one can't help but think what better film it could have been if the studio had not interfered.
It's not really a horror film anyway. I mean, that's why King didn't write it as King.
Yeah.
Right? But I remember when this movie came out, I got a phone call from my mum. She goes, I just saw the most awesome movie.
That's awesome.
I'm like, what was that, mum? And like, Steel Magnolias?
Yeah.
It was called Thinner. I'm like, holy shit.
There you go.
Yeah. I am a massive Stephen King fan.
Same.
I know you guys are going to go and wax about, obviously, his literature, actually.
I'm talking about the adaptations.
I love his adaptations.
Same
and I don't care how bad they are. I've always got time to sit down and watch them.
Same
it goes from the great stuff, Shawshank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stand By Me, Green Mile, and I will watch it.
The Mangler and Graveyard Shift.
I will watch it all the way down, to the bottom of like,
that's
sometimes
cool, man.
They come back Dude. Again kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
well, see, I haven't done Sometimes They Come Back or Sometimes They Come Back for More. I don't know, whatever
again,
the third
sometimes
one
that's the third yeah. one. Sometimes yeah. They Come Back. Again
sometimes They Come Back, I just watched again
that's
the
cool.
other week on Blu-ray.
How good is that movie?
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Like, it actually is better than I've ever seen it. Like, Every time I saw it, I was like, this is kind of cool. I watched it last and I was like, this is fucking awesome.
It's appreciated that one.
Absolutely. And I did a bit of a trilogy because I did Needful Things around the same time as I watched this. And that's really good. It's aged so well. It's Max so good.
The man.
So
can
good.
I tell you what you have to check out if you haven't already is Mick Garris recently did Bag of Bones.
Bag of Bones. We started watching it on Netflix and we had buffering issues. But because Piers Brosnan?
Yeah, Piers Brosnan, yeah.
Yeah, we saw the start with a traffic accident and I was like, oh my God. And then buffering issues. I'm like, I need to watch this.
Not only is that one of my favorite Stephen King adaptations, I think it's really good. It's one of Mick Garris's best films.
Cool.
Mick Garris hold the record for most Stephen King adaptations?
I think so.
Which you can catch an interview on fakechimp.net with Mick Garris.
And you might still be able to win a copy of Bag of Bones there as well.
That never got claimed.
Did it not? I might need to borrow that if my Netflix doesn't start working.
I love Stephen King.
Entries are now closed.
Thinner, definitely.
I want the DVD.
Thinner might be one of the last sort of horror theatrical releases that you got, wasn't it?
It didn't get a theatrical here, though, did it?
No, it did, yeah. It did. Yeah, it did. It came out 6 months after the US, because I remember it was here in cinemas for about 2 weeks.
I only caught it on videos.
So. Yeah. And the last thing I wanted to mention about it, so we can move on, was the tagline for the film was fucking awesome. It was, "Let the curse fit the crime." I think that's clever, and that's again another lost. Taglines are such a lost art these days.
I got such a soft spot for this film. So when it came out, my dad told me my dad's a massive Stephen King fan. The same thing, told me about the film.
Yeah.
Told me about the story rather, and you know, this gypsy and he places a curse on the man and he touches his forehead and curses him. Do you know what he says? What the curse is? And I was just like, no. At the time, I'm like 10 years old. I'm like, no. And he goes, think about it. I'm like, nah. He goes, you know what this is. I'm like, what? And he goes, thinner, Sean. Like, so whenever I see the film, that's what I think of, is my dad just frustration. Thinner, dude, come on.
That's awesome.
Nah, great film.
All right, let's move on.
Forgotten gem.
How about yourself, Sean? What's your forgotten gem?
My hidden gem, forgotten gem, rather.
Show us the hidden gem later.
No, comes from, you should be so lucky.
I've got $1,000.
1992. Mm-hmm. It was a little film directed by first-timer called Carl Franklin. Carl Franklin has since gone on to do one.
You're telling the story, Sean.
We're supposed to guess this.
Yeah, I'm like, Jesus, right? Anyway, film's called One False Move, 1992.
Oh, so we're not going to guess that one.
False Move,
I'm going to guess One False Move.
Yeah, One False Move.
Right? I think I said it first, though.
I
just repeated what he said.
It's about small cat town police sheriff.
This hasn't got Michael Keaton in it, does it?
No,
that's one good
that's
cop.
One good cop.
And it has another title as well, I think, as well.
It does.
Anyway.
Arkansas Police Chief Dale Hurricane Dixon, played by Bill Paxton. Not Carl Weathers. No. That's Hurricane Smith. Yeah.
Hurricane Carter?
Small town detective, and he prepares as the FBI shows up because there's a drug deal gone wrong in other parts of America. And these bad guys are heading towards Star City in Arkansas, where Chief Dale Dixon is. The bad guys are Billy Bob Thornton and his girlfriend Cindy Williams, and there's their best mate, who's this like hyper intelligent criminal, like an IQ of 152, and they're heading towards Star City. So as Dale Dixon gets ready, he sort of dreams of big time police department escapades in LA with the aid of these two FBI agents that are here to help solve this case. It was written by Billy Bob Thornton.
Wow, okay.
Right? Because before Billy Bob Thornton really became, he had a writing partner called Tom, I forget his name. But together they wrote a couple of scripts. And this was the first one. And it is phenomenal. It is such a good
film.
Safe to
say I've not seen this one.
I'm not sure if I have. It sounds so familiar.
I don't know if I even know. Like, usually I like visualize a poster in my head.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm trying to put
in
my
head. Tom Epperson, right?
Mm. Right.
This predates Sling Blade, obviously, by a couple of years.
Yeah.
But what makes it so good, obviously, like I say, is the script. I mean, outside of Carl Franklin's direction, which is exceptionally efficient, the script itself is just a masterclass in screenwriting.
Right.
It's when you watch it, everything is just so concise, so clear, so marked out, and every single action isn't necessarily because of a reaction, but based on a character's trait.
Right.
So then by the time the payoff comes, it becomes this exceptionally emotional payoff because everybody's characters are fulfilled in probably the only way they can be.
Right,
it
right.
It packs an emotional wallop. It's like a sledgehammer at your heart. It's absolutely dynamite.
Done a good job selling this one.
Absolutely.
Like, honestly, really. You, I mean, like, it's violent,
right?
But not too violent, right?
Yeah.
It's soppy at times, but not too soppy.
Cool.
It's really worth.
If anyone listening knows this one, hit us up on Facebook and we'll just have a discussion, because I'm going to go look for it.
Yes. Send us a DVD.
It is.
We'll swap you.
I know it's been released in America on DVD.
Right, yeah.
It's
not
necessarily been released locally. It was in VHS. That's where I first caught it. But obviously, VHS is a thing of the past. If you're into other methods of getting your film, legal or otherwise, you can get your hands on it that way. But it is very worthwhile. In my opinion, it's very worthwhile tracking down.
I might do a Netflix search.
Nah, factor is definitely a key point there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting story about that, because you're saying he wrote that pre-Sling Blade. Did you know Billy Bob Thornton was writing a movie with Jim Varney, a.k.a. Ernest?
Right.
Right before Jim Varney died, they were going to make a movie together.
Was this... Wasn't an Ernest film. Right, this is interesting.
This is
a new
film they're going to do together, because they came from the same acting troupe in Kentucky. So.
Cool. Were they in that Daddy and Them together?
Yes.
They were, right. Yes. Okay, I've still got to watch that. Yeah.
Does anybody else feel like Billy Bob Thornton is like one of the great misfires of Hollywood?
No, I think he's really forged his own... thing. I think,
but what? I mean, he's released a lot of sort of direct to DVD stuff, but like he never kind of fulfilled the promise. I feel like he was showing back in
No, because I disagree. I think now he's taken the reins, and he's very selective in what he does. And when he does it, he's fucking amazing. He can have a small cameo in a shit movie and be absolutely incredible, like
The Judge,
Intolerable Cruelty.
Yeah, Intolerable Cruelty. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, Ryan. Okay. Yeah,
that's just one example. Yeah. I mean, but he does stuff like Bad Santa and, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Fargo was his most recent, like, incredible. I know it was TV, but that was insane.
I wasn't going to bring Fargo.
Amazing performance.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter. It's Billy Bob Thornton. You can bring whatever you want up.
Yeah.
When he's on, he is completely... And I think even in his lesser roles, when he comes on screen, he really just... He's a force to be reckoned with. He's a presence. Like in The Judge, you know, I wasn't a massive fan.
When he's in,
but him on screen in there, you're like...
But he can play such a really compassionate role, and then such an absolute turd asshole.
Yeah,
he is one of those. Like, again, from my chameleon money, he's a chameleon. He's up with it with Daniel Day-Lewis. Is that when he puts his heart into it, the guy transforms.
Yeah.
Like, he never plays the same guy twice, like Johnny Depp, and like. And I just feel like I want more of him, and I just feel like I can never get my fix enough because it's just little cameos. Yeah. But anyway, one false move.
Ain't got no gas in it.
Very worthwhile.
I think so.
That was it. Some people call it a Kaiser Blade, I call it a Sling Blade.
All right, I guess that leaves me.
Yeah, bring it on, dude.
I don't know if you'll know this one, because it hasn't had a DVD release.
So is it an obscurity or forgotten gem, then?
It's a bit of both. I think it's a forgotten gem, simply because this is a film that won a lot of accolades.
Right.
I'll go straight to the director and see if you can pin it. It's Bill Bennett, Aussie director, who did The Nugget.
Kiss or Kill.
Kiss or Kill. Spider and Rose, In a Savage Land, If Two by Sea. And then in 1986, he made this film.
Is that the one with Dennis Leary and Sandra Bullock?
That's the
one. Right, cool. That was a good film.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's generally good in everything.
Before I tell you who is in this one, I'll give you the plot and see if you can pick it. It's two police officers escort an Aboriginal woman across the outback who is about to stand trial for murder. One of the characters is a racist cop, and he really gets a kick out of mistreating this woman. And the other woman is more compassionate. The other cop is a woman. And when they become stranded in the middle of the outback, they start to form a relationship with this woman and then start to believe that she's not innocent. But it's just an amazing, powerful film about Indigenous relations and and white sort of
cultural acceptance.
Yeah. Did you say 86 or 96?
It's 86. Now,
just making sure, because other people have made that mistake tonight.
Right, well, the film was the official selection at Cannes, and it won all kinds of prestigious awards.
Right.
No go? No guess?
86.
For a while, I thought it was... Dead Heart?
No, it stars Giacarides and David Argue.
No,
okay, it's called Backlash.
Right.
You might know the poster.
Mm.
And now that I've gone through all the synopsis and I've talked about the accolades and who directed it, that's about all I've got to say.
Well, fuck you guys, because those two are really obscure, and I thought I just went with something that people had just ignored for a couple of years.
Okay, well,
you just replayed what I did last week. You just didn't listen to the fucking brief.
That's a forgotten gem, not an obscurity.
Hang on a second, you weren't here last week. No, but all right. So maybe next time I'll go for something a bit more common but forgotten.
I've already got my next three or four forgotten gems lined up.
All right,
well, that's all right. Are they going to be slightly more known than the last?
I'm pretty much sorted in till about 2018.
We're rotating this sucker, so we've got probably Guilty Pleasure coming up. I think because last time we did the Obscurity. Oh, anyway.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Last time we did Guilty Pleasure because I did Spookies.
Yeah, that's
right. Unless we forget Spookies.
Before we do move on, where can you get your hands on Backlash?
Well, this one I would just say hit up torrent sites because it hasn't got a release
anywhere.
Oh my God. Don't do that.
Sean's so cryptic. I was trying to allude to it
without being obnoxious.
With a title like this.
Video from the director on YouTube.
Yeah, right.
Just fucking rate the movie on IMDb.
I just figure like it's long overdue for a release. This is exactly
So it's never been released on DVD.
This is the exact MO I took with Frog Dream in it. Even going to get a release. I was telling people, however you can find it, find it. It might even be on YouTube.
Enjoy it. I think it is.
About every movie that you can't find on DVD, you can go to Vimeo and find it.
Yeah.
That's Vimeo? Where I've been finding a lot of classics, man. You know the Bill Maher film, Religulous?
Yeah, Religulous.
Religulous. Religulous.
No idea.
Have you seen it?
Is that a forgotten gem or an obscurity?
It's a fantastic atheist documentary.
Right.
Pulling apart religion. Yeah. But anyway, that's not the point. You can't get it anywhere in Australia. Okay. You know, it's not even on like Netflix or anything like that. So if you go to Vimeo, it's right there.
It's on YouTube. I know because I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah. That's
well, there you go. So, yeah. And you don't even have to do really anything illegal because that's fine to access those sites. Vimeo's someone else has put it out there.
Yeah. Legal site. Enjoying it. Until they pull that plug. Bad.
Exactly. Oof.
And therefore, Backlash might be up there.
That's a deep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to
highly recommend
Backlash.
I really want to check it out. And it is, I will say, it is one of David Argue's finest performances.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. So that wraps that up. Good work, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
You'll never come back again.
Oh, shut up, Ralph.
And that brings us to the end of the show.
Can I just say one last little thing before we go? All right. Thanks, guys. Good night.
Unless he does it in Christopher Walken's voice.
What if
could you do it?
What?
No. It's rest in peace, Gunnar Hansen.
Oh, yes. I was going to wear my Texas Chainsaw t-shirt tonight.
That was a sad
very
loss.
Sad news. Mm. It's like we've had two horror icons pass in the last month. Yeah, with Wes Craven beforehand.
Yeah.
So,
in a tragic year.
What a way to bring the episode down.
I know, right? But at the same time, Jared, your hair looks amazing today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Yeah. I actually just watched Mosquito days before poor Gunnar's passing. Mm. I had never seen it before. I sold it on eBay
there
a couple days later.
There is a connection between Gunnar Hansen and Mosquito, other than the fact that it's Gunnar Hansen.
Yeah.
What's that?
Leatherface and Mosquito, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz. No?
Okay. Oh, I like it. That's a good note to end on.
Buzz.
Oh, my God.
Ba-dum-bum.
That was terrible.
That was awful.
Yeah, well, yeah. You can fix that in post.
But he won't.
No, probably
guarantee
not.
He'll leave it in.
It's got nothing to do with me. I'm not doing it.
It's you.
I know, it's like...
it's like
hang on.
It's like the... Oh, no, I can't ruin that.
I'm going to hang shit on myself.
All right, before we go, what's your film that you're looking forward to most next week?
At Monster Fest?
No. Just next week.
Theatrically. Creed. I'm seeing on Monday night. I'm really excited
about
that.
Creed looks good.
Creed's my pick of the week, too.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got Ari Kleinman's Partisan to watch.
With Vincent Cassell. That looks good.
Ari was a couple of years ahead of me at the VCA.
Cool.
I am very excited to see what this guy comes up with. It's supposed to be very good.
Excellent. Look, we're going to wrap it up, but I want one more thing.
Okay.
Have you seen Spectre yet?
No.
Okay, we move on. Let's wrap this bastard up.
Okay, then.
I was going to have a discussion, but that's not worth it. So anyway, the next episode is going to be our 20th episode.
Hello.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to, right at this very moment, I'm going to cue some cheers in. So I'll say that again. Next episode is our 20th episode.
Woohoo!
You don't have to do that because I'm going to cue them in.
I was delayed in my
He was talking about himself in third person before. Yeah.
What's going to happen now is I'm going to play that. I'm going to add it in and you're going to be that loser at the back of the room that just yells out.
Yeah.
That'll be all right. I can deal with that.
Yeah,
it's not the first time.
Playing a character. Playing to type.
So actually the next podcast will be the Christmas special.
I think so. I love Christmas specials. It's the only time of the year I get to watch Christmas movies.
Oh, what's the best Christmas movie?
Well, we can't say. It might be one of his his forgotten gems or obscurities or guilty pleasures. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you can't go past It's a Wonderful Life, as far as I'm concerned. It's
Picks off Die Hard.
Jingle All the Way?
I love Jingle All the Way.
Turbo Man! I want my Turbo Man!
Of course Jingle All the Way 2?
Of course I have him with the Rock'em Sock'em Jedi.
Well, Christopher Walken was in Batman Returns, and that's a Christmas film.
That's true.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I could totally do that this Christmas.
Don't make us do it.
Oh, please do it.
He'll do it in post.
The only way, I'll just throw to Christopher Walken.
Jingle bells.
Jingle bells. Jingle all the way.
Ow!
That was terrible.
I'm not even going to try. So, thank you to Daniel McDonald, sound design, as always. A wonderful score underneath our lovely voices. It's the same score every time. Same voices, though, so it kind of works.
Yeah, I like it.
Beautiful.
I like our voices.
I like Daniel O'Donnell, the Irish
singer.
And Daniel McDonald, the musician who scores
his face on a tea towel.
Oh, better than a tattoo. I thought you were going to say my mum's got a tattoo of Daniel O'Donnell. Like, that's punk rock.
Daniel McDonald had a drum. Okay, anyway, so.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Jeez. Until next time. Ciao.
Ciao.
It was just degenerating, but I loved every minute of it.
It was just a spiral.
Who can outdo each other with the worst joke yet?